How's it going, everyone? Welcome to another edition of Common Kaisers. I am your host, Chris Seaton, and joining me, as always, is...
Adriana Hinojosa. Hey, guys.
And look at this. We're in the same room.
In the same room.
Cheers,
my
friend.
At the same time zone.
Cheers.
Mm. Let's enjoy a social sparkler while we...
It is the dog days of summer.
Yeah, it's about that time, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I was in town. I said, Arian, we got a movie to watch.
We do have a movie to watch.
We have an awesome movie to watch.
Yeah.
So, and then afterwards, let's talk about it, because...
Yep.
This is not just any movie.
This is a lost movie. I always mix up the name. David Allen.
David Allen. Yes.
How do we know David Allen?
David Allen is an effects pioneer.
Yep.
He worked on things like The Howling, Young Sherlock Holmes, and did a lot of work for the great Charles Band, especially on movies like Subspecies. Have you ever seen Subspecies?
Yeah, but that's not the one I know him from.
Which one do you know?
Puppet Master.
Puppet Master, yes.
That's the
original.
One.
Yes,
yeah.
The stop motion. So, David Allen, a great stop motion pioneer.
Yep.
With the likes of Phil Tippett. I'm blanking on others right now. Sorry.
David Allen. Ray Harryhausen?
Well, Ray Harryhausen is going to come up a lot in this episode.
Right.
So, David Allen, unfortunately, passed away back
in 1999.
Yes. So, he's been gone. Nearly 30 years. Like 25 years at this point.
Rest in peace.
So, about 25 years before that, he spent his time trying to produce a movie of his own called Primevals.
Yes, yes.
And Primevals is at the time, it was one of those, like, my God, like, it was spoken in words in film circles of nerds that, like, because he would show, like, little snippets of stuff that he would work on.
Mm-hmm.
And when you'd see it, you're like, this looks amazing. Like, what is this? He's like, yeah, it's a little movie called Primevals I'm working on. But can never get the funding together. It started and stopped several times. And it was pretty much one of those, like, Lost Cause movies. Like, we're never going to see this. Like, we'll never... It's up there in the film... parlance of, like, the day the clown cried.
Yes.
It's made.
Yeah.
But we'll never see it, kind of thing.
Right.
Now, let's add a little dent in that. So, David Allen spent 20-plus years trying to get this thing made. He did the effects work himself, and then at a point, I believe Charles Band came in and did help him produce the live-action segments.
Yeah, because filming was done in 1994, I believe.
I think it was 93.
93, actually. That
yes.
Early, okay.
So, but unfortunately, money ran out, and they never got to finish a lot of the shots in the film, so it just kind of sat unproduced.
Right.
Like, it was, like, close. It's so close.
Right.
Famously, there's a Joaquin Phoenix movie that he was making, like, right before he passed away that was, like, 90% done, but there's, like, maybe, like, another, like, 10 minutes of, like, film that they need to do.
Bummer.
And, well, that producer is now looking to use AI to wrap it up. And I bring this up because this is all going to come around with this movie we're going to be talking about. So, unfortunately, Allen passed away. His friend Charles Band promised him before he died and promised his widow. He's like, look, it is my life's duty to make sure that this movie sees the light of day. Now, it's funny because concurrently, there was another lost stop-motion film that was only talked about. People have seen pictures of and maybe some snippets and circles called Mad God.
Yeah.
Which, by the great Phil Tippett.
That we all know and love.
We all know and love. And Phil pretty much started it before he went to work on Jurassic Park.
Yep.
And he was like, you know what? No one does stop-motion movies anymore. Like, unless it's like something like Aardman. You know, something fun, fancy. Like, he's like, I want to do something weird. And did maybe, like, 25 minutes of work and then shelved it and considered it a lost cause until some kids working at a studio found it. Like, what is this? He's like, this project was working. I'm like, what if we help you finish it? And cut to 2022, and I'm sitting in the theater watching Mad God, going, holy crap, it's there, it's done. Now, when we say lost and Now it's being released. There's caveats to these things, which we are going to go into, because
yeah,
it's not like it was a finished. Any of these Primeval's Magog, these were not finished films. These were films that were started, stopped for various reasons: budget, timing, loss of interest. If you listen to our main show, Kaiju Kingdom, there's another famous Godzilla movie that's like this called Wolfman vs. Godzilla, which was.
I think everybody listening and watching this podcast is very familiar with Wolfman.
Yeah, and that falls kind of into this, a little bit into yeah. where that, but that's a little more fan filmy, but it's like it's got a production budget where these were like passion projects by adamant filmmakers that just couldn't quite get it, you know,
right.
Get it off the ground. So Mad God inadvertently sprung up Charles Band to go, no, now it's time.
Yeah.
Let's finish this. And Charles Band, if you're not familiar with his work, runs what?
Full Moon Entertainment.
Full Moon Entertainment. And what is their most famous output, would you say?
Puppet Master.
Puppet Master's one. And my good friend Sergio loves Puppet Masters to death.
Who doesn't love Puppet Masters?
Puppet Masters is fun.
Yeah,
it is.
That's like the thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone, if you've never seen Puppet Master, you know of Puppet Master.
The original Puppet Masters is quietly it's a video store classic.
That's exactly what it is.
Yes, it's a rental classic. Yes. It is 100% a rental classic.
Yes.
Because it's such a delightfully little, like, just angry, vindictive movie. And you're like, so pretty much it's like Chucky, but they don't talk, and they're like actual toys. Which spun off a whole franchise. I'm pretty sure it's what keeps Full Moon like
in business.
In business, yeah. Because I think we're at like 13 different Puppet Master movies at this point. And two spinoffs.
I know there was one movie called Puppet Master vs. Demonic Toys.
Yes.
And I was like, wait a minute, there's another franchise called Demonic Toys?
Yes.
The whole Full Moon universe right now is Evil Bong and Ginger Dead. I'm like, who?
I would say Full Moon is more of a thinking man's trauma. trauma, like Lloyd Kaufman knows, he's like, look, we make schlock. But we make beautiful schlock. We make dirty, like, especially in the 70s and 80s, with the whole underground scene. You want something dirty, and you want something that's offensive, and this is not what we call highbrow entertainment.
Have you ever seen Father's Day?
The
by Trauma? Or Lloyd Kaufman at least shows up in it.
The one from 2011?
That's about the time.
I think that one is actually done by the guy that made Psycho Goreman.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I have seen Father's Day.
That is, you want to that's talk a about, greasy movie.
Yeah. Yes. That's exactly what they are. Trauma makes greasy movies where Full Moon makes, how do I put this? Full Moon makes, they make movies that look like you ordered a better movie off Wish. Now, sometimes you get something cool, like ordering off like AliExpress or something like that. Like, I ordered this. That looks like what I ordered, but there's something slightly off about it. Look, I watched Pre-Hysteria a ton of times as a child.
Same.
Yes, which I think the great David Allen worked on. He did the stop motion.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yes. But
that was Full Beam or Moonbeam.
That was their family division. Because, let's be honest, a lot of kids were renting Full Moon because... Yeah, like, it's Full Moon Entertainment. Yeah. Like, that's got to be for... And my dad rented me a bunch of those when I was a kid. And I'm watching, like, Puppet Man. I'm like, eight. I'm like, this is not for kids. But I'm like, I'm kind of into it. I'm kind of into what's going on here. Subspecies, vampire, like, ancient vampires with, like, little goblins that, like, help them out.
Little freaks.
Castle Freak.
That's the word I was looking for.
Castle Freak's a good one. Let's see, what's another great...
Trancers? No.
Is no, don't. No, trans. No, actually, I think Transfers is a full
is
moon.
It? Yeah.
Yeah. Because here's the thing, Charles Band's been in this business for a long, long time. Before he even did Full Moon, he had, I want to say, what was the name of his production company? It was like.
It's the guys who made Robot Jocks, right?
Yes. Yeah. He produced Robot Jocks and Robot Wars.
I want to say it's not canon. Look, internet.
We got it right here. But. For those who've never seen Robot Jocks, let me see here. Yeah, this is hard. This is great potting right here. Sorry. pulling this up. And this was by Empire Pictures.
Thank you.
Was Band's production house before he sold it off and started Full Moon. So Full Moon, known, and especially, you know, and Band himself has even said, like, I make cheap movies. Like, he is the... Some would argue he is the heir apparent to Roger Corman, except he didn't create as many careers as Roger Corman did. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah.
But the man has passion for what he does. He clearly loves making movies. He's made several of the Puppet Master movies himself. But he's better known as a producer these days.
Right, right.
I've actually met Band twice at Comic-Con.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a super cool dude. Other people I've talked to have told me stories. But when I talked to him on those 2K, one with my buddies, like the 2002 Comic-Con.
I wonder if there are people born after 2002 listening to this podcast. Well, and if you are, then welcome.
Yes. So we're at, 18-year-old Chris is at the 2002 Comic-Con with his buddies. And his friend,
so old.
I know. Oh, believe me.
Who was at that con? Who was it?
That was my first 4-day con.
Yeah.
Like, I was going every year, but that was my first 4-day. Like, we got all the time in the world. And my buddy Sergio only brought...
Oh, like, that story. Yeah.
So he brought like $400 with him for, you know, the 5 days. Spent 300 of it at the Media Blasters booth on a giant trash bag full of hentai. And then went over to the Full Moon booth, met Charles Band, and bought his deluxe Puppet Master set, which had just come out. So I was there with him, and he's like, he was going on. He's like, I love Puppet Masters. It's so cool. He's like, yeah, thanks. Just talk to the guy for a minute. Addendum to that story, sad thing that happened was Sergio, like 2 hours later, set his bag down with the signed Puppet Master set, and some asshole stole it. Now, an upside to that, 2 years later, we're back. He goes back by. Band's at the booth. And Sergio tells him what happened. And Band, to his credit, he's like, look, man, I'll give you, like, I have another one of those box sets. I'll give it to you for, like, $50. And he's like, not only that, but I'll sign it. I'll sign every copy on there. Like, he made sure that he made up for it. He's like, I feel bad that happened to you. So, again, that's why I say, Band is a...
Charles Band.
Charles Band. So, Primevals. A movie.
Here we go.
Yes.
Here we go. All right. So, let's talk about Primevals. That's why we're here tonight.
And that's why we're here. So, all that built up, we are talking about the lost film that is Primevals that is now available to watch via Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime. That's how I watched it.
Yes.
Oh, look.
It has a physical release coming out later this year.
For $10, I've spent my money on... I spent my money in a worse place.
Mm-hmm.
Initial thoughts.
Initial thoughts. Look, I am an easy mark for a lot of stuff. Case in point, our mutual friend Chris Mowry.
Yeah.
When we watched Godzilla vs. Kong, he came out and he's like, what'd you think? I'm like, man, I'm such a mark for this stuff. You could have the dumbest thing on the planet, which I could tell. He could like, this is pretty stupid. Like, Godzilla's blasting. Like, he literally talked about it. He's like, all right, man, this is the make or break point when Godzilla blasts the hole into the hollow earth. I'm like,
you bought into it?
I bought into it.
Yeah.
I'm all into it. Look, there's a part of me that loves film because it kind of brings out that wonderment as a kid.
Right.
But then there are times where, like, I'm watching Furiosa and I'm like, I know you're in the outlaw, you know, you're in the wasteland, but there's certain things going on here that I just can't buy into.
Right.
So it's hit or miss. No, I knew what this was going to be going in. Like, I knew that this, you know, I've seen various pictures, some footage. It was always supposed to be a loving homage to the films of Ray Harryhausen.
Yep.
Now, does it live up to the films of Ray Harryhausen? That's a whole completely other argument. But what I did appreciate was that I grew up with these movies. When I'm watching this film, because you got to remember, stop motion was done like in the early 80s.
Yep.
And then they went and shot all the human stuff, the human story, in the early 90s.
Right.
So it's a new movie that is woefully dated on two different occasions. Like,
right.
It is a layer cake of things. And this is the problem when you're... This is my problem when people do... Like, they're like, I love this kind of film, but I know it's goofy, so I'm going to make it goofy. Kind of like, I'll give you two examples. One, have you ever seen Turbo Kid?
I have not seen Turbo Kid.
So Turbo Kid knows what it is,
right?
But doesn't play it straight. They're like, we know this, and they're winking at you the whole time.
Right.
Whereas Psycho Goreman knows exactly what it is, but plays it straight.
Right, right.
And
right.
That's why I think Turbo Kid fails where Psycho Goreman works.
Right.
Because all these movies that we love, all these dumb, stupid movies that do these, and I say that lovingly, by the way.
I get it.
There's no judgment.
Yeah, we all get it.
But you have the key to it is you are serious in what you are trying to accomplish. You are earnestly trying to do something here. And yes, it might come off goofy. It's why The Room is such a cult classic, because Tommy Wiseau legitimately thought he was making a movie. So I'm watching Primeval's, I'm like, they are overtly earnest in what they're accomplishing here. Because then what they're trying to accomplish, we're trying to make the next Ray Harryhausen like monster movie. Now, you're trying to do that on a budget of about $300,000, and you're doing it with a lot of actors who really have no business acting. But, that said, if you can get past the fact that it's written like a 1960s drive-in movie, shot in the 90s with effects from the 80s, you can look past all that, and you can see that there's a gem in there. Now, does it work all the time? I would argue no. But overall, I personally enjoyed it because I understood what they were trying to get at. Okay. Now, opinions vary. Arian.
Okay. Have you seen Planet of the Dinosaurs?
I have.
I feel like... That's a stupid question.
Yes.
Okay. They're movies. All right. The great Joe Bob Briggs has said, mm-hmm. The only bad movie is a boring movie.
100%.
This movie gets boring at times.
Yeah, I'll agree with you.
The opening sequence is amazing.
100%.
Oh, amazing. And then it just kind of meanders a little
bit. For a movie that's 90 minutes, it is literally 90 minutes long.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, to the point?
Yes.
It kind of just meanders into, and it does the thing I hate the most in mm-hmm. movies, where, oh, we walked in a jungle. Let's describe everything that you are already seeing, and let's not elaborate on little things that are way more interesting,
mm-hmm.
like the troglodyte people, or what are they called?
Oh, the
you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
right?
yes.
And yeah. You know the set that they built for that, like that's amazing. Let's go in more into that. No. Let's keep the movie. Keep the movie going.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, look, there are parts of this movie that are good, mm-hmm. and there are parts of this movie that just drag.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a slow burn, because it's, you're like, oh, man, there's times where I caught myself on the phone, like, tell me more about Primeval. Oh, great. You know, who's the lady, Explorer lady, the British lady, who's in a completely different movie from everybody else.
Her name is Juliet Mills. Her name is Claire.
Sounds about right.
Yeah,
yeah. And then you get the Han Solo of the group.
Hold on a second. Let's talk about this one. So I'm watching this with my brother.
Yeah.
And so we're only about 20 minutes in.
Okay.
And so they set up everything. So basically, the opening movie is a group of
Tibetan
Sherpas, Nepalese Sherpas, fighting a Yeti, a really cool looking Yeti.
Yes,
and you can clearly tell, like, they are doing all the old style Harryhausen cutaways and stuff like that. This movie does hit the ground
yes,
running
yes,
at first. You're like,
yes.
Man, I'm in. Yeah.
Yeah.
But here, I'll tell you this. When they cut to the credit sequence, already I'm like, oh no, Charles! Like, because you can. This is the thing that's painful with this movie, is that you can tell when Charles came in there, and I'm trying to finish this for my friend, but I am not matching what he shot. Yes. I am using things to because I want to gussy this up a bit because now I have a vested interest in making some money off of this. Yeah. So that opening sequence is all of these drone shots and stock footage of like the Andes Mountains and like you know Mount Everest and stuff like that. Just these sweeping Lord of the Ring-esque shots with the same font that's over, like, giving you the laydown of everything. I'm like, that's not what this movie is, Charles, but okay, I understand. It's too new. It's too new to what we just watched. It does. It's a little, it is jarring. So, we cut to, somehow, the Yeti that was viciously murdered by these Nepalese people is brought, much like King Kong, to the modern world. Where it's shown off. Now, here's the other thing, too. I don't know if this is an error or what, because they never explained it. In the opening sequence, they have the Yeti, the puppet that's superimposed on a green screen, in this grand, like, museum. And then they cut to the back, where this guy, our main character, who is Matthew, he is apparently some sort of crackpot, like, zoologist and...
I didn't get that. I just thought he was some dude off the street until
his friend walks in, sees this, and he's like, "I was right." And like, there are Yetis, and he actually comes across with this wild conspiracy theory that Yetis are, you know, might be a bigger thing. Like, they might be genetically engineered by like an ancient civilization. And you're like,
"Oh, we'll get into that."
Yeah. So they go to Nepal. Because he tells the
Time out. You glossed over.
Oh, the back room. Because apparently they have the Yeti stuffed on the front.
Yeah.
But in the back, they have his full skeleton, brain, organs, everything else. I'm like, wait a minute.
He's
sitting right there.
What is going on?
Yeah. So this is all this 1950s lab, like, abominable science stuff going on in the background. And they're looking at, like, this thing's brain, and they're like...
I'm still with it, to the point where they show you the brain, and they say, someone's been messing with this Yeti.
Yeah.
Someone poked a hole in here to
whatever. They find trauma to it. Yeah,
let's go. Let's go.
So here's the mystery. Here's what we're trying to figure out. Now, this thing, too, they're assuming there are more Yetis already off the bat. Like, well, there's one, there has to be more.
Right.
So that's the assumption already. I'm like, most of these... And that's the thing with most Bigfoot movies, and it's always just one. Like, there's always just one out there. Like, which never really explains anything. Like, there's okay, one on, little. On. Yeah.
Good Yeti movies.
Yeah.
Good Bigfoot movies. There's one.
Yeah.
Crappy. There's like 12 of them.
Yeah. Well, did you ever see Abominable?
Abominable. Is that the one with Lance Henriksen?
Actually, yeah. I think he's in it for like 5 minutes.
Yes.
He's one of the hunters. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a really cool.
Is there more than one Yeti?
In the end, there is.
Okay,
but then there's a main Yeti. So they're like, okay, we have to go to Nepal. We have to go to the mountains, and so this is our story. Like, now this dude is trying to prove his theory that these things might not be natural, and that it goes deeper. They're alluding to that, like, humanity might be genetically engineered. So they're taking like wild leaps. Off the bat, just setting all this up. There's a lot of there's a lot of dialogue setting up everything. So they Indiana Jones their way from Boston to Kathmandu, which Kathmandu looks like it's Van Nuys.
I was about to say it's Van Nuys.
Van Nuys because he shot it. If you don't know Van Nuys, it is the Riviera of California. It's nothing but warehouses. And graffiti, and it's a bunch of people making Mylar balloons. That's the number one product is Mylar balloons. So our hero is attacked by these thugs.
Mugged
by these thugs, who is then saved by the Han Solo of this movie, whose name, are you ready? Rondo Montana.
Let's go.
My brother at that point just went...
I'm in.
I'm 100% in. I'm like, Rondo Montana. I'm like, okay, you guys aren't even trying, but I love it. Yeah. I appreciate this. This is my This is my jam. We're 20 minutes in this movie. I'm like, all right, I'm in. I'm all
in.
It's
going at a good pace.
It is.
Yeah.
And Rondo doesn't want to do the job.
No, he never does.
No. But they convince him, like, no.
Now that he's on display, more will come.
Yeah.
And my favorite part is, okay, you either want to hunt two things.
Yeah, yeah.
An elephant.
Yeah.
Or a Yeti. I'm like, oh, man, this guy's in. He knows. Yeah. He knows.
Yeah.
So our heroes show him two or three Xeroxes to
explain what's going on.
and he's like, all right, I'm in too. All right, let's go.
Yeah, yeah. Because at this point, the world knows that Yetis exist. they've made it abundantly clear, but apparently no one was paying attention. Again, you have to remember, this is 1993. There's no internet.
But the whole thing was like, the whole press conference was like, hold on, so only your scientists get to look at the Yetis?
Yeah, yeah.
Our scientists get like, oh no, trust us. Trust us, this paper, because there is no internet.
So
this paper will explain everything there is to know about Yetis.
100%, yeah.
Oh my God.
So again, that's the thing, when you're watching an old movie, it's not like when you're watching Terminator 2 and you're like, wait, where are all the cell phones? Like, oh no, because Terminator 2 did the smart thing. It's set in 1991.
Right.
So that way, it tells you off the bat, this is 1991. Computers are not computers today. So when you watch it, you're never taken out because, oh no, I know where I'm at.
Right.
That's why those movies are timeless. But when you're doing something like this where it's like, we're being ambiguous, it's now horrifically dated. So they fly to Nepal where we meet the brother of one of the
guy Sherpas. From the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget his name, but the Sherpa, the main Sherpa, gets murdered by
by
the Yeti. And his brother now wants revenge.
Right.
Now
right.
He's
That's
Ahab.
Right. Right.
He's Ahab. He's got his gun. He's like, I'm going to kill the Yeti that didn't kill my brother, but I plan on killing more Yetis.
He looks like Liu Kang's brother from the first Mortal Kombat.
He actually does.
Right?
It actually might be him. I'm not sure.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
So, okay. And then there's this girl that shows up. She was in the beginning, too, that was living with the Sherpas.
But isn't a Sherpa.
Isn't a Sherpa, but she's apparently friends with our hero.
Sure.
So they all get together and they're like, we got to go into this mountain range because this is there are other sightings up there. That's the first place to look. And this is, I know where you're going. This is where it gets boring. Because now we have a lot of establishing shots of beautiful mountains that clearly they were not there to film because they just pulled it out of a stock footage library.
Sounds about right.
And they are clearly up in the hills. So I don't know if they shot this like in Bulgaria or something like that. Because there's definitely scenes that look like they weren't shot locally. Either that, or they went up to like they went up north. Because there are definitely shots like if you know your California landscape, they look like they're up in the Sierra Nevadas.
I doubt that. I think I'm going to lean towards like Hungary or Romania or somewhere.
Shots look like they're like out there in Hungary or something like that. So they're definitely not. You're not like on the base of Everest or something like that. And they clearly shot like during this. They're in the spring seasons because it's supposed to be like this big snow cap thing. Like when you think of when you think back like when Harry Hazlitt shoot the stuff,
right?
Like the Arctic scene in Beast from 20,000 Phantoms. Like
oh yeah,
you felt like those guys, even though they're on a set somewhere.
Yeah, no,
like
yeah.
They went above and beyond to make it feel like no, you're in the Arctic tundra.
Yes.
And then here's the Regisaur, like the snow is blinding it, but you get an outline.
Hold on, how did you say it?
I'm drunk, so it's
the Radiosaur?
How's it pronounced?
The Retisaur.
Retisaur, thank you.
Is it? Did you say Radiosaur?
I think I did.
Okay.
I've had a couple of beers. So there's some shots. There's some. It's just a lot of dialogue.
There's a lot of dialogue explaining what you, the viewer, are already seeing.
Yes.
So it's like, look at these.
We are padding time here.
Yeah, and you said it's a 90-minute movie that could have been
75 minutes, and probably would have done the same.
Yeah.
This is not a theatrical release right here.
So
that's the thing, this is what I love about V-Cinema in Japan. But you can do 50 minutes, and that's all you need.
Right.
We just reviewed a 50-minute movie.
Electric Dragon?
Yes.
Hell
it was
yeah.
50 minutes, and it was
Hell
right to the
yeah.
point. Like,
Hell yeah.
But for some reason, American movies like, no, 90 minutes. Like if it's going direct to video,
It's got to be some sort of NTSC or something.
I don't know. But so we meander about. We get Rondo Montana, like, going on about Yetis. We get our hero, like, no, this stuff. We get all the characters doing their character stuff. The girl who's the friend, she's just, like, worried about all this stuff. Like, maybe we are toying with things we shouldn't deal with. Blah, blah, blah. So they all decide to camp out for the night. And then at some point, the young Sherpa gets up and takes off. And I believe it's Rondo that discovers, hey, we're missing someone. And they follow his footsteps into like a ravine or a crevasse, whichever one you want to talk.
Crevasse, okay.
Into a crevasse. Where finally, after about, we're about 35, almost 40 minutes into this movie at this point, another Yeti finally shows up. And it's a cool stop motion. Like, you're like, okay, now the fun's back on.
Yeah.
Because now this Yeti is in this sequence. And to be fair, David Allen did his best to blend live action and the stop motion together. Like, I'll say this. Like, the scenes that are stop motion, they're great. They blend well. He does the thing that, you know, Harryhausen used to do where it's like when the puppet has to interact, he makes a little puppet of the person.
Yeah.
And so they do that flying around. So the Yeti, and you can see the Yeti's got this thing on his head. It's got like a little, like...
Looks like a scar, but it's a little bit more than that.
It's like something mechanical.
Yeah.
And it's clearly like violent and it's thrashing around. And they shoot it, and they chase it off, and so they start following, you know, where it went. And they end up coming to like a cave system. And this is where the movie kind of slows down for a minute. Now by this point, we're pushing an hour. We're pushing an hour into this movie. They go into the cave, and they're just looking around like, oh, man, like, that's interesting. But then, as they go deeper in the cave, what do they find?
Not a UFO, like a tower, right?
They find a tower.
Yeah.
And, again, God bless you, Charles Band. You tried your best. But this is the point where it's like, I have to fill in the shots my friend did not get a chance to do.
Yeah.
Now, if David Allen had done it, this would have been a beautiful matte painting.
Right.
But instead, it's a CGI quick render of what a citadel will look like, which is never explained. They're just like, huh, that's interesting.
Yep.
No one's noticed that before. Let's go there. And they end up falling into, like, a hole underneath the citadel. Never really explaining what the citadel is in the first place.
The snow here is amazing. The snow, it's like...
Oh, it's my God! This is what my brother checked out. He's like, okay, they're clearly, like, rolling around in asbestos.
Yes. Unfortunately, yes.
Because when they fall, like, all this is supposed to look like snow, but they couldn't afford...
They're not wet.
They're not wet at all. It sounds like paper, but it's not paper. I'm like, they just took asbestos.
It looks like packing peanuts.
Yes, 100%. And you can hear him like slosh around. I'm like, you guys could have at least edited the sound out. Like, just a little scrubbing here and there. But no. Depending on your view, it's either charming or it is low key.
I was mildly annoyed at this point. Mm-hmm. So, look, at this point in the movie, I'm pretty sure I just pulled out my phone and was looking at research. So I was checked out. Did anything happen for the next 10 minutes?
No. They go wandering and they find... What do they find?
They find a... I don't know. I looked up and it was
a UFO.
It was a UFO. It was a UFO, but then
UFO, but it has like a... It has a wooden ladder. It's like held... It's propped up by... Wait,
so... Didn't they go into like a sunny part of town?
Oh no! You're right. So after they fall out of the citadel, they come into. You're right. I'm missing again. They've been drinking. They come out after they fall down, and there's a valley. It's like a savage land.
Yeah.
So in hidden in between, behind the citadel, which by the way, satellites exist at this time of, you know, like you would have known something like that. But there is this valley apparently in the end in the Himalayas that is a lost area. It is a
that here.
That's right. You know, I'm skipping forward. I forgot too much. So as they're exploring, they come across a tribe of troglodytes.
Yes.
Which are pretty much dudes in ape suits just kind of like moving around against, which I couldn't, this is the part. I'm like,
that could have been the movie, man.
Is this new? Like, damn, this is the other thing. Like, is this new or is this old? I can't tell. Because some of it looked new, some of it looked old.
Well, here's the frustrating part of this movie, where the troglodytes are great. They look like they came out of the movie Congo.
Yeah.
And they built the set with like, these huts. I'm like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
But it's just like, the whole sequence is maybe 5 minutes.
And it really doesn't go anywhere.
Doesn't really tell you much.
Other than they leave, they go camp, and then they come back in the next morning.
And they're all dead.
They're all dead. Like, the village has been ransacked. And they're like, oh man, something happened here. So they follow the ransacking. And that is when they come across another cave.
Yep.
Where they find the UFO.
Right. No explanation.
No explanation. They're like, oh, well,
they just keep going. They just, they just see how far we go.
And by the way, no one's ever like they comment on the. You're right. They comment on the things that you're seeing right there. And then they're like, all right, then let's move on to the next thing. It is an ABC kind of.
Oh, let me get this skin sample from this troglodyte.
Yeah.
Let me just. So now they're like, okay, so
there's Yetis and there's troglodytes, and the main dude's like, maybe they're related, like maybe this is the. This valley is a petri dish of like proto evolution kind of thing. Like he's making these wild assumptions. Like it's old science. Again, it's written like it was written in the early '60s when we didn't know what DNA was. So they go, they find this UFO that has this wooden ladder.
Yeah,
that's like you're, and no one sat there like, who built that?
There's
a UFO. Well, let's go up into it. And they decide to go up. They leap behind to the girl in the and our Sherpa friend stay behind.
Yeah.
He's the one with the gun.
Right.
And they're like, well, there might be other troglodytes, and whatever took the troglodytes might be coming this way. So
you stay here.
You stay here. You're our lookout. So they go up into the ship, much like the TARDIS, much bigger on the inside. Because when they get there, you're looking at the ship and you're like, it's really not that big. But when they get inside, it's this vast hall. And, like, they're walking around. They're like, oh, my God. And it's so 1950s sci-fi. But I appreciate that. I kind of love it. It's so retro. But, again, we come into where Charles had to come in and fill in the gaps for his friend. It's putting the frog DNA into the dino DNA.
Yeah.
So they find this control panel, and they find this corpse, this mummified corpse. They're like, that must have been the pilot. And they push a button, and fancy new CG. Now, by the way, of all the CG, this actually looked the best.
Sure.
Sure. That's what I'm saying. It looked the best of all the new stuff. So this alien pops up, and it's speaking in a language, but it starts showing.
Looks like one of those frogs from Hell Comes to Frogtown.
100%.
Yeah.
So it's clearly like female. It's kind of like, yeah, it's not a suit at all. It's CG. And they give, like, they're watching as, like, a screenplays of, like, these things came during, like, ancient times. And they've been here for a while experimenting and figuring things out. And pretty much they're like, huh, okay, so these guys might be the reason why the Yetis are acting up. I'm like, that's a bold leap. So they're like, all right, well, we got all this information. Let's head back. And as they're heading back, they get attacked.
The attack is, they look up, and there's a bunch of reptilian-looking alien dudes just drop a net on them.
Yes. At that point, I'm thinking back to the absolute classic that is Kung Pao Enter the Fist. And it's like, yes, a tiny net. This is the most diabolical of all devices. Because, again, they're just like, they're just netted up like, oh, man, we got caught. Yeah.
They're selling it, yeah.
And by the way, you're in a ship, but there's clearly a hole in the ship that goes into, like, a rocky, like, cavern. Like, there's so many caverns in this thing. So they get caught, they get knocked out, when they wake up, they're in this arena. And there's all of these really cool-looking stop-motion reptoids, like, wandering around. And They speak like Sleestak. So like, ah, yeah. Like, yeah. They're cool. They remind me a lot of like the Sleestak from Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
But they have like armor and everything. So this is where you're like, okay, we're back into the good stuff. This is what you want. And to be fair, I didn't realize at the time, we're entering the third act of the movie.
We're glad to see it.
Yeah. But to its credit, the third act just gives you everything that you want.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're dealing with the Sleestaks. That's what I'm calling them. the girl and our hero realize, oh no, these are the aliens.
Yeah.
Like, they've been genetically manipulating themselves for centuries to the point that they become these primeval beasts.
You said it. You said it.
And there's our title.
Right, hey, primevals.
Yes. So they're put into these wooden cages, and there's a couple of the troglodytes too.
Yeah.
And there's clearly a leader, Sleestak, and like some other members, and there's a whole audience watching.
It looks like the climax of episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very gladiatorial arena. And there's a horn that's blown, and these other Sleestaks start pulling this gate up, and
who shows up?
Another Yeti. So we're at three Yeti. We're
three
Yetis deep. Lamau,
three Yetis.
But here's the twist, though. This Yeti comes out, and you can clearly see, like,
it's chilling.
It's
fine.
Then they realize, like, they're not evil. They're more intelligent than we thought, and they're kind of pacifistic.
Yeah.
And the head Sleestak points to another Sleestak on a big 1950s style ray gun, who gears this thing up, and it's
cranks
all
it
stop motion. Cranks it. I love that it cranks it. It cranks it like a music box, and then fires this beam at this Yeti that makes it go nuts. Like, you can see its eyes turn red, and it starts roaring like Kong. It starts starts thrashing around, and the Sleestaks unleash one of the troglodytes, and the troglodyte's like, oh no, I'm screwed. And tries to run, and they give it like a spear, like, no, go fight it for our entertainment. Which you were sitting there like, you guys are like super evolved, yet somehow devolved.
This is how
you're passing your Friday night.
Yeah.
Like, you're watching gladiatorial. Like, there's no, they're like, we don't care about conquering worlds or anything like that. We're just chilling and being dicks. That's kind of what we're doing.
Primeval dicks.
Yeah. So the Yeti and the troglodyte fight, which is a cool mixture.
Not really fight.
Well, he grabs him and just kind of tosses him.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, our hero Rondo manages to get himself free from the cage and frees a couple of them. Our Sherpa friend decided, hey, I waited too long, so let's go find. Comes across the arena and he's trying to hide from the Sleestaks and get our friends, our heroes,
free.
So creates a diversion, and at that point, Rondo is now stuck with the Yeti, and the Yeti like kind of comes out of the craziness.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh crap, I killed this thing, I didn't want to do that, and it feels bad. You're like, God, the poor Yeti. But the other Sleestak,
there's a Harryhausen part of it where
100%,
like, oh, he has a personality.
Yes. Like, and again the wonderful homage to that, it's what Harryhausen did best, where other monsters were just, in the 50s they're big bugs, they're just animals, they are of what they are, and they have to be destroyed.
No. Yeah,
where Harryhausen always gave a personality.
Yes,
that's why his movie. That's why his movies have held up. That's why kaiju movies hold up, because what do they have? The monsters have
personalities. Yeah.
They are characters in of their own right, and that is a big thing. That's why Alien. That's why Predator. That's why all of our best monsters live on, because you can relate to them in some way. Like, you can, oh, they're clearly intelligent. So our heroes get free. They start a small riot, and the Sleestaks are like pretty much in their like their Mars Attacks language.
Yeah,
they're like, get the interlopers, and the laser Sleestak shoots the Yeti again. So he's now like on a rampage, and our heroes are trying to have to like dodge him, because their only way out is through the gate that the Yeti came out of.
Right.
So they manage to dodge it. There's other Sleestaks that come in, because now they're trying to fight him, and the Yeti gets a hold of him and starts tearing them because he's in a violent rage. And after a moment, like, our heroes pretty much take out a couple. They're sneaking around. They manage to get past and get to like the gates of this weird citadel thing. Which, by the way, they saw them left the UFO. They get to the gates, and at that point, the evil beam has worn off of the Yeti.
Right.
And the Yeti wants to help our friends, because now we have a common enemy. We must team up. And so as they're trying to escape these giant Kong wooden gates, the Yeti comes in to block the Sleestaks and starts fighting them, which they start like throwing like
spears and stuff.
But we get a really cool 2-minute sequence of our heroes painfully acting through this sequence that they, you know, has been shot 10 years prior. But you get, like, a nice superimpose of the Yeti picking up these lizard monsters and throwing them and, like, ripping them in half. And you're like,
oh, that's cool.
This is fun. That's I'm having cool. a good time.
Yeah.
They manage to get free. The Yeti's like, go, fly, you fools. Like, Gandalf style. I will hold them off. They manage to get away. The Yeti causes some damage to where the whole place starts kind of crumble. Because, again, in these days, you have to bring down.
You got to bring, yeah.
You got to bring down yeah. the place around
you
them.
Can't like have, yeah.
You can't have, you can't leave any loose threads. Nope. So they get away, they get out, they go through the UFO, get back out, and at that point, like, everything comes down on the slee stacks. The Yeti sacrifices himself. Yeah. And our heroes just stand and watch as the Citadel, somehow in the minute and a half all this goes down. Yeah, it's like a flood or something yeah. like. And they get away. They get out of the UFO. Get out of the Citadel somehow. And they're watching it explode from a distance. Which I'm sitting there. I'm like, you skipped over a couple of parts. Like, it just went from bam to explosion. Yeah. And like we're watching. Like, man,
that's the thing. It's like you explained yourself all the way through. You explained everything you did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hold on. We skipped over the part where the female lead,
mm-hmm.
the British lady.
Yeah, yeah.
Who takes a moment.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about this. They're running from them because as the Yeti saves them, they're running. A couple of slee stacks follow them. And she's watching as the Yeti dies.
Yes.
But then, much like an idiot, she's standing there. She gets shot in the side by an arrow and pulls it out. So as they're running away from all of this in the cave, they stop for a minute. She's catching her breath, and she's like, I'm not going to make it. And our hero's like, no, you have to, because this is your life. Where she's like, no, it's your life's work. Go tell the world. And she records. She's got her little recorder, like Norm MacDonald in Dirty Work, giving like, no, like, so, like, our hero here, he's the one that found it all, blah, blah, all this stuff. Gives it to him, and she's like, go, and, you know, tell the world what you saw here. By the way, no pictures, nothing. No. Just first-hand experience, which obviously works in the scientific community.
I think maybe there's like a little fur that they cut from the troglodyte, but that's about
might
it.
Be something. Yeah, other than that, like no. Actually, no. I know. I think there's a moment where Rondo talks about. He's like, I think it's when they're at the troglodytes. He's like, do you really think this is a good thing to tell the world? Like this place is
untouched.
It's almost verbatim the same. The same spiel that Dan Stevens gave, what's his name, in Godzilla and Kong when they find the Ewing
Brian
Village?
Brian Henry,
yeah.
Is that his name? I don't know.
Yeah, when he's like, do you really want to tell people about this?
Right.
Because you're going to spoil it. Like, it's everyone's going to come down here and like raid this place.
Yeah.
And that's why our hero Rondo's like, I don't think we should tell people because just let it be. Like, this is too beautiful. So she dies. Only person out of our group that dies, by the way. And she dies such a dumb death.
If I were a betting man, I would have put money on the Sherpa to die.
Me too. I'm like, this kid's going to die at some point. But no.
He makes it.
No. He makes it. She makes it. So as they get away, then the Citadel comes down. And they're like, man, that was an adventure. Credits. And that's it. And that is the Primevals. And Ariane, I'm gonna take a drink here. You give me your
thing. Like I said, there are parts of movies. I think you can enjoy every movie. Is this a boring movie? Parts of it are boring. Parts of it are fun. Parts of it make you wanna. How you go from, oh, we found a Yeti.
Yeah.
Oh, someone's been messing around with the Yeti. Let's go find out who's been messing around with the Yeti.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a troglodyte. No, actually, it's these reptilian aliens that are genetically modifying their DNA.
They're somehow evolved, you know, but de-evolved.
What is going...
Yeah.
And part of it's like, no, like, ride with it.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of, in the middle.
Yeah.
The beginning is great. Mm-hmm. The ending is great. Ending's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
In the middle, it's just kind of... There are worse things... There were worse things you could spend $10 on.
Yeah.
Am I happy this movie is made?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Do I think this deserves to be made? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Is it worth your time?
Does it live up to the hype? That's the thing.
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I'm going to say no.
Now, look, I will somewhat agree with you on that. But I give it a pass.
Okay.
Because this is what an unfinished film.
Yes.
This is not the director's. It's the director's vision, but since he couldn't finish it, his buddy had to come in and fulfill his vision for him. It's kind of like what we're seeing in manga right now with Berserk.
Oh yeah.
Mira died.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So his best friend and his staff are finishing the story for him. But that's the thing. You're looking and you're like, it's there. I'm liking it, but it's missing that oomph, like that certain thing that only the creator could give me.
Yes.
But that said, as a movie fan who loves these kind of oddities, the story behind it, you know, there's a thing. Like,
yes, the story behind the movie is way more interesting than the movie itself.
Someone said that about Monsters, Gareth Edwards.
Really? I didn't know the story behind it.
Pretty much, he shot the whole thing in like 2 weeks. Where it was just him and those two leads.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. He pretty much was the camera, and then he did all the effects in his hotel room.
Interesting.
And actually, the whole destruction sequence at the end, they happened to be down in Mexico, and a hurricane blew through Corpus Christi. So then they hightailed it to Corpus Christi and shot after, like, a week after the hurricane. And so the monster destruction is all this hurricane destruction. So they're like, they struck out. They're like, oh, I don't have to create this, we can just walk through this neighborhood that's just been completely slammed by a Cat 4 hurricane, and it gave it like this great looking, you know, like Monsters, set piece.
Yeah, Monsters was great.
I like Monsters a lot. Yeah. So this is I overall enjoyed the movie, but I'm with you. Like, yes, you know, waiting as long as we have, it's been like nearly a 30-year wait. Actually, I think it has been 30 years at this point.
At least, yeah.
Am I glad I watched it 100%?
Yes.
It's actually something I would probably own because there's a lot to actually study in this film over, like, just enjoying it. I did enjoy it because I knew what they were trying for. I do think that's going to be lost on a lot of younger folks who watch it unless you are really steeped in old-school monster movies.
Unless you're a nerd.
This movie's for nerds. This is 100% a nerd movie.
I say that with all the heart, all the love, and all the whatever, but this movie's for nerds.
Look, I said the same thing about Mad God. Mad God
is a movie for nerds.
It's 100% a movie for nerds. Like, this is a film buffs movie. Like, and not only that, like, when I saw Mad, when I was sitting in Mad God, I thought this movie was like 30 minutes long. No, it's 95 minutes. And I'm like, this is going on a long time. Like, holy crap. And much like this, they had to fill in new stuff for it, you know, with modern techniques.
Right.
Let's talk about the techniques. What did you think of the stop motion?
You know, at first I was like, oh, this is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Until, and here's the deal. Like, when you look at stop motion, you think of Harryhausen stuff. You think of Cradle of the Lake Monster. And you think of, you know, Laser Blast and all this. And there's a little bit of jarringness to it.
Yeah.
This was very, very smooth.
Smooth.
Because it was done with AI, right?
Yes. There's a new technique. So there's a dude on Instagram. I forgot his name at the moment, but he has been taking, like, Harryhausen stuff and doing a motion smoothing with
like,
it.
So it's like it's an AI. It's like a 4K, 8K. Yeah.
It's a 4K upgrade. And what he does is he uses AI to fill in like the two frames that you're always going to miss when you're doing. Because again, you're moving at 24 frames a second, but because of the way it's moving, it's always going to have that jarring look. It's why Harryhausen, like, it's why the skeleton sequence in Jason the Argonauts is astonishing. Because you got to remember, like, not only are they filming it like with how we do modern, where it's like, okay, the thing's going to be there. So you're fighting the skeleton, and Harryhausen has to physically move these things to match the motions. But the motions are, like, he's not just like, okay, the arm's moving. Like, no, the skeleton is moving at all. Things are moving around. Like,
it's interesting because what Harryhausen does is he has motion to his skeletons. Versus what early CGI does, where it's moving just for the sake of moving.
Yeah.
And this, it's, stop motion for me is always going to look way better.
Yeah.
Just like in this movie, the stop motion is going to look way better than any CGI they could have done.
Yeah.
That's a big plus for this movie.
Yes.
Which has almost no CGI to it.
Yeah, I think the CGI that is used mostly for filling in sequences where they're like, okay, no one knows how to do a
beam effect, if you will.
A map painting anymore.
Sure,
or anything like that. Like, all of the establishing shots that that David Allen never did. You can clearly see, like, okay, the Citadel, that's all CG rendered. Like,
yeah,
there's
the reptilians.
The reptilians, yeah,
looks great.
Yeah.
The Yeti looks amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the new, like the original alien that pops up in the ship, the hologram, all CG, it does get jarring. But when you watch, and I'll give Band credit this, motion smoothing, the stop motion, I actually agree with him, and I think it was actually a really good idea to do it because it did give a better fluidity. Because when you look at some of the early footage that leaked out of this, it's very Harryhausen-esque. Like there is that kind of like slight jerkiness that you get from stop motion. Where here, it looks like what, you know, like Del Toro did with Pinocchio. Like,
yeah.
There's clearly motion smoothing done to fill in the gaps that you cannot do by hand.
That is a big plus for this movie.
Yes.
The effects are very well done.
The monster designs are cool.
Great.
I love the Yeti.
It's a different take.
Yes.
More ape-like.
Yeah, it's Mighty Joe Young-ish.
Yes.
Yeah. The primeval's themselves are actually a cool design. I like the look of them. I love pulp, and it's very pulp. Like it's very much like out of Edgar Rice Burroughs. Like this looks like something that like Tanner of Hallucinator would fight. You know, things like that. That goes to show you how much of a goddamn nerd I am. Like I'm quoting at the Earth's core. So
this does look like yes.
Yeah. So, overall, for a medium it's not exactly dead, but at this point, it's more or less, you're doing it because now it's just
you're a nerd.
You're a nerd, and it's something you want to do.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that. The acting itself is like, okay. It was better than I was expecting it to be.
It's 90s TV tier.
100%.
Yeah.
They clearly cleaned some things up. There's clearly, you know, they color graded it. They did the whole thing. I mean, overall, it's a big pulpy film. And it was not trying to be anything else but a big pulpy film. It clearly wanted to be a Harryhausen movie. It falls short of that. But I give it full credit, and I appreciate it on that level of, like, you're earnest in what you're trying to do, and it comes off. It's not bad. I've seen far worse. It's an old movie that I, as a kid, I remember watching. I was bored to tears. I didn't like. It was Beast from Hollow Mountain.
That was
the Valley of Guanji ripoff.
Crazy.
I watched Valley of Guanji before, and then my dad's like, "Here, watch this." And like, it's a 70-minute film. 45-50 minutes of that are just cowboys talking, and then you get like 10 minutes of the dinosaur at the end.
Didn't Willis O'Brien do?
Willis O'Brien, I think, did that one. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I think it was just, I need a paycheck. And they only had a budget for that last like 10-15 minutes for the Allosaur. Yeah. Believe me, Guanji's a better movie. Like, you want to watch a cool dinosaur movie, go watch Valley of Guanji.
Valley of Guanji.
Look, I'm not for a lot of remakes, but I've always said Valley of Guanji, you can do as like a...
Cowboys and Dinosaurs, man.
You could do it as like a Unforgiven kind of style, like serious. Like you can sell the pulpy elements, but like you can make it like a hardcore Western with dinosaurs.
Wasn't Beast of a Hollow Mountain? They just took out the dinosaur and re-released it, or they just took the same script and took out the dinosaur.
It's just almost verbatim. It's the same basic story.
Yeah.
All of this shot in Mexico, by the way.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, all of those movies were shot in Mexico because it was cheap to do. Final thoughts.
Movie for nerds.
Movie for nerds. I would definitely recommend it to people. If you're a film buff, this is definitely something to watch. It's much like next year, we're getting The Day the Clown Cried, as we talking about earlier. Like, and you believe me, I am looking forward to watching this train wreck.
That'll be next year's April Fool's.
100%. But much like watching Mad God, I think overall, like if you the two, Mad God's the better movie.
Yes.
Even though Mad God is essentially a Tool music video for like 90 minutes, because there's not a lot of narrative. It's a lot of subtext in that movie. Where this is just, we're making a pulp film because David Allen grew up on those movies, and this is the movie he wanted to make. Full credit to Charles Band to fulfilling his final wish and sticking the landing. I will say this. He made it look as nice as it could. I know that there's hype around this movie because, yes, it's a lost movie. But it's definitely a movie for nerds. And if you're a nerd, I would definitely sit down and watch it because you might find a lot to love in it. Is it a perfect movie? Not by any means. Mm. But I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, you're probably a nerd, so you should probably go watch it.
It's on Amazon right now. I rented it for $4.99.
I bought it for $9.99.
Wow, so it's in your library.
That's my thing.
It's in your library, okay.
Yeah.
Because you're going to want to go back and actually, you know, for film nerds, you're going to want to study the stop motion effects.
I was going to make a drinking game. I was going to make a drinking game out of it. Every time they say science, maybe.
Yeah, the script is not the strongest. It is not the strongest. Like, this is definitely one of those movies, like, the effects are the stars of the movie.
It's the planet. It's the modern Planet of the Dinosaurs.
100%. Like,
yeah.
Like, we're just shooting this cheap. We're trying to make a cheap movie that, you know, we went from drive-ins to direct-to-video. They are one and the same. They are the lineage, the same movie. We are making cheap, dirty movies that hopefully will entertain you for 90 minutes. And we'll get your $5 for it, you know, for a 3-day rental or a...
Inflation.
Yeah. Other than inflation, yeah. Or you'll pay $1.50 to go see it at a drive-in back in the day. But this is definitely one of those movies. And you know what? I kind of say we need more of these in this day and age.
Yeah.
Because that's my problem. It's why I wrote Godzilla and Kong. You know why? Because it was a movie that's like, we are not making Shakespeare here. We want you to come sit down.
We're making Hamlet. What are you talking about? This is...
We want you to have a good time, and we're giving you a goofy movie, but you're going to have fun. You're going to have fun.
Yeah.
And I think that got lost amongst the Godzilla community because it was only 3 months after Minus One, which was the Spielbergian, you know, style Godzilla movie.
Oh.
But you can have both.
Yes.
I said you can have both.
Yes.
I love Minus One, and I love Godzilla and Kong. Look. Kong or Godzilla suplexes Kong off the freaking Pyramid of Giza. At that point, I'm like, I'm all in.
Yeah.
I'm all in. I'm having a good time here. And that's what you want. That's why we love B movies. That's why we do this show. I show you things like The Seventh Curse, and you go,
"Have you seen Rats?"
Yes, 100%. All right, guys, we're gonna wrap this up. If you liked what you saw here, we are. On social media, you can find us on X at The Kaiju Kingdom, Instagram at The Kaiju Kingdom, Facebook.com/ The Kaiju Kingdom Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to The Kaiju Kingdom Podcast if you like the show because they're on the same feed. Aryan, do we know what we're doing next?
We do, but we don't want to spoil it yet.
Okay.
We'll tease it on our social.
So... Hopefully, yeah. I mean, we might be doing more of this. It seems like the flow was better today, wasn't it?
Oh, there's no, like...
Yeah.
And then there's, like, this news anchor, like, two-minute delay or whatever.
Yeah, this is... We might be doing this a lot more.
If you like it, let us know. If you hate it, let us know.
Let us know, so...
Yeah.
All right, well, that will wrap it up. This edition of Common Kaisers for myself and...
Danny Nahosta.
Thanks for watching, guys.
Thank you.
See you next time.